Welcome to The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group. Hello, everyone. Orion Samuelson, along with Steve Bridge and a special market guest coming your way as we wrap up another busy week in the marketplace from Wall Street all the way to the wheat fields of the plains. Let me do it one more time. Sorry, here comes a retake on segment one of the markets. 3, 2, 1. Welcome to The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group. Hello, everyone. Orion Samuelson, and it's our weekly visit looking at markets from the wheat fields of Kansas to the streets and avenues of New York's Wall Street. And what a week it has been. But then we say that every week, don't we? But this week, trade wars have been the topic on Wall Street. Not only trade wars on Wall Street, but a war between big oil and big corn on Wall Street and in the marketplace as well. It's been a worry week for Wall Street, as any talk of a trade war is taken seriously by traders and investors around the world. And despite what the president is saying about trade wars can be brief, but interesting, President Trump, after shocking markets with the risk of a global trade war, came under some intense pressure today from U.S. business interests and foreign trading partners to moderate his threat to slap tariffs on steel and aluminum imports. I can just imagine what his cabinet officers are going through, people like Sonny Perdue, the Secretary of Agriculture, who knows how important trade is not only to agriculture but to all segments of industry in the U.S. And now he's working for a man who says, we're going to tear up the trade agreements, and he's already done that to some extent, but we're going to do it even more by imposing tariffs. So anyway, the war goes on over the weekend. And Cohn, the free trade advocate who is part of the Trump family in the White House, said that he really wants to convince the president to change his talk on the trade situation, because Cohn is part of a faction in Trump's administration that warned the Republican president for months not to threaten the 25% steel and 10% aluminum tariffs that he pledged to impose in a strong announcement on Thursday. There was speculation that Cohn, who told Trump the markets would slump on a tariffs threat, might step down as a result of the president's decision, but there was no indication of such a move anytime soon, according to a senior White House official. White House spokeswoman Sarah Sanders told reporters, "Gary was here yesterday afternoon. I talked to him in my office several times, so I don't have any reason to think otherwise." But turmoil inside the administration over trade came during one of the most hectic weeks of the Trump presidency, with confusion around the issue intensified by advisor Hope Hicks' resignation on Wednesday and Staff Secretary Rob Porter's resignation on February 7th. National Economic Council Director Cohn, Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin, and others for months had been trying to steer Trump away from aggressive tariffs, but the president resisted their counsel. Interviews with large trade associations, as well as lobbyists who represent companies in several industries, indicated back-channel discussions were underway with companies trying to convince the White House and the Commerce Department to include key exemptions in the coming official tariff policy. Industry groups want exemptions for imports from individual countries or for types of metal that cannot be found in the United States. For example, companies that use cans for products like drinks or soup were among the most vocal opponents. Unlike most brewers, we are selling an increasing amount of our beers in aluminum cans, and this action will cause aluminum prices to rise, likely to lead to job losses across the beer industry, according to MillerCoors spokesman Colin Wheeler. Can manufacturers plan to pressure lawmakers and administration officials next week? Robert Budway, who is president of the Can Manufacturers Institute in Washington, said, "What Wilbur Ross doesn't realize is that a few cents on $115 billion food and general line cans is a lot of money." But I guess as we watch the events of the week unfold, Trump's attitude on tariffs should not come as a surprise. At least so said Commerce Secretary Ross in a CNBC interview. He said, "The president has been consistent all the way from his campaign days to the present about doing something big to protect steel and aluminum, so it should not have come as a shock." And a senior official at a major industry trade association, speaking on conditions of anonymity, said businesses want to pull Trump back before he formally imposes tariffs next week. You'll see a full court press behind the scenes to try to get some, if not all, of the toothpaste back in the tube. And so another week of turmoil in Washington by a president who said, "Oh, it's easy to break up trade agreements and we can move on and we can win in those trade agreements." So, in addition to all of that this week, what happened today as we ended the week? Well, today the S&P 500 ended another turbulent week on an upbeat note, but major indices posted their worst week of losses since early February because of that threat to impose tariffs on steel and aluminum. The gains on Friday came as investors who had been spooked by the prospect of a global trade war backed off those concerns and noted a trade war was far from certain at this point. And, of course, Trump said yesterday there would be a 25% tariff on steel imports and 10% on aluminum without exemptions for any countries. And today, Friday, the president struck a defiant note saying trade wars were good and easy to win. And Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross said tariffs would have a trivial impact. Phil Orlando, chief equity strategist at Federated Investors in New York, said Trump's announcement was made to call everyone's attention to the U.S. trade deficit, but investors decided that a full-blown global trade war was not going to happen. And for a real estate guy like that, you pound the podium, you rattle some sabers, you get everybody's attention, and then you negotiate back to some reasonable midpoint. So what happened today? Because the tariffs could dampen profits for everything from car makers to beer companies and result in higher prices for consumers. Shares of big U.S. steel companies and manufacturers were under pressure on uncertainty over the impacts of the tariffs. Shares in Caterpillar, a buyer of raw materials and a big exporter of construction machinery products, were down 2.6% after falling 2.8% in the previous session. General Motors down 1% in today's play. And for the week, the S&P 500 dropped 2%, the Dow was down 3%, and the NASDAQ fell 1%. Wall Street had posted gains in the previous 2 weeks as it recovered from a steep early February sell-off. But the tariffs are unlikely to significantly hurt corporate America's overall earnings, according to strategists with stock market companies who were not immediately adjusting their profit estimates following Trump's announcement. McDonald's down today sharply, 4.8%, after one of the rating companies lowered its price target on the stock and cut its 2018 earnings estimates, citing a disappointing early sales impact from McDonald's value menu. And the stock was the biggest drag on the S&P and the Dow today. JCPenney shares down 5.4% after the department store chain missed same-store sales estimates. So in addition to the trade war talk, indeed, there were other topics that did catch the eye of investors on Wall Street. Well, let's look ahead to next week and see what's on the docket. On the U.S. economic calendar next week, February's employment report will likely offer an upbeat picture of the economy, despite reports ranging from consumer spending to industrial production and home sales, suggesting growth slowed at the start of the year. So the Labor Department is expected to report on Friday that non-farm payrolls went up by 200,000 jobs for the second straight month in February. The unemployment rate is forecast falling a tenth of a percent to 4% even. That would be the lowest since December of 2000, when the jobless rate came in at 3.9%. Other data on tap include the Commerce Department's factory orders report on Tuesday, expected to show orders down 1.3% in January after accelerating 1.7% in December. The trade report on Wednesday expected to show the trade deficit having widened to $55 billion in January from $53.1 billion in December. The main reason for that would be a drop in exports. Some of the other events and activities coming up: Sears Holdings Corporation scheduled to report fourth quarter results on Thursday. The struggling U.S. retailer expected to see continued declines in quarterly revenue. The company, with $3.3 billion in debt, has been trying to boost liquidity after warning last year it had doubts about continuing as a going concern. That coming from Sears, which once was America's largest retailer. Other reports next week: expectations are low for Kroger Company, scheduled to report fourth quarter results on Thursday. Investors expect earnings before items to decline amid stiff competition, fueled by Amazon's $13.7 billion purchase of Whole Foods last year. Dollar store chain operator Dollar Tree expected to report higher same-store sales and higher quarterly revenue for its holiday quarter. That report coming out Wednesday. Abercrombie and Fitch will release fourth quarter earnings on Wednesday. The U.S. teen fashion retailer expected to post its second consecutive increase in quarterly revenue after the holiday shopping season saw improved traffic and spending by consumers at its stores. That company has been struggling and attempting to overcome some of the problems, has been sprucing up its online offering to compete more effectively with other e-commerce retailers that have taken away a chunk of the traditional retailers' sales. And then we get reports from global markets as well. Thursday, the European Central Bank will announce its interest rate decision, followed by a news conference with ECB President Mario Draghi and Vice President Vitor Constantinou. The Bank of Japan scheduled to come out with its interest rate decision on Friday after a two-day meeting. And then we look to South America. Brazil's industrial output data for January, that's due out on Tuesday, likely to show a 1.3% decline after an increase of 2.8% in December. Let's turn to the oil market for a moment. Oil prices were higher today as Wall Street stocks bounced off session lows, but benchmark crude futures posted their first weekly decline in 3 weeks on fears of that tariff situation on steel and aluminum. On Thursday, oil followed the stock market lower after President Trump said he would impose the hefty tariffs on steel and aluminum. So that pretty much does it. Oh, but I guess there's one more thing, impact, that the tariff announcement could possibly have. President Trump's threats to unleash a trade war over steel crushed hopes of substantial progress in the latest talks to rework NAFTA, pitching negotiators into a political maelstrom and heightening fears for the trade deal's future. Trump's statements have really cast a pall over the efforts to renegotiate the 1990s-era North American Free Trade Agreement, which had already been disrupted by the early departure of a U.S. official handling one of the most divisive subjects, the content rules for audio, or for autos. Jerry Diaz, head of Canadian private sector union Uniform, said after meeting with Canada's chief negotiator early today, Trump's latest gambit to push his America First strategy immediately soured the negotiations on NAFTA, get it back on track, and get a new trade agreement hammered up. So there's no question that a lot of what came out of the White House this week had an impact on many different segments of the American economy and left a lot of questions on what else is going to happen with the economy because of the news and the announcements coming out from the White House. So we'll talk about the agricultural scene with Archer Financial Services' Greg Groh, who'll be talking to Steve Bridge about markets in livestock and in grains when we continue on The Markets, the market sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Greg Groh with Archer Financial Services. And Greg, as you heard Gordon Stoner lay it out there for the wheat industry here across the nation, there's some headwinds coming right now for that commodity. How do you see those wheat growers and wheat sellers trying to make sense of the market moving forward?
Well, the real issue that's come up in wheat has been the tremendous growth in production capabilities in Eastern Europe, specifically Russia. And they have become a massive competitor. When you think back 20, 30 years, they had a lot of issues just taking care of themselves. And now with the changes that have occurred and privatization that's occurred across that region and higher productivity, the use of better inputs and technology, they're a formidable competitor, and that's been the biggest problem with our ability to be competitive in the wheat market.
When we look at the weather map right now, what do you see as winter wheat conditions and what those producers will be looking like for yields?
Some of the worst conditions we've seen starting out in many years, and that's been a concern, and you've seen the wheat market move off of the bottom here despite some of the slowness in trade. And I think there is concern about this year's yield. We'll see how things go. We need some moisture here in March to turn things around a little bit, and right now it still looks a little dry in that area.
Sometimes we can use wheat to feed livestock. Does the wheat price have any impact right now on what's going on with these other commodities?
If wheat would rise too much here against corn, it would probably push itself out. But, the other part of that is that poor wheat pasture conditions right now may be forcing some cattle a little closer or a little sooner into feedlots than normal because of poor conditions in some of that area right now.
On the livestock side of things, those beef producers, they've looked at so far a pretty good year in the past, and are they looking forward to what 2018 might bring them?
I think 2018 is going to be a bit of a year that's going to be a little difficult for a lot of people to sort through, in that we're going to see an increase in production. We've had placements in the feedlots up for 6, 7, 8 months in a row. So cattle supplies are building. On the positive side, we've had a very good growth in demand over the last year. Export markets have been strong. The weakness in the dollar has helped that a little bit. Feedlots operators are keeping very current. The demand side, meat-based proteins around the globe are strong, and I think that's helping to offset what's going to be a pretty good jump in supplies going into the summer. We will have a summer drawdown or a doldrums type of a situation after spring demand gets past us, but I don't think we're going to see a real train wreck in the cattle business this year. We do have supplies that are going to be with us and maybe a bit burdensome, but I'm pretty optimistic about the demand side right now.
A couple of things there that we're really focused on, the global picture, wheat being a global commodity and the livestock trade internationally. Does the dollar have a play in either of those two markets right now?
I think the dollar is part of us, of all of this right now. I think the global trade in meat has benefited by the weaker dollar in the last few months, and certainly that may help play into the wheat market a little bit. But the wheat markets, it's all going to be weather-based, and it's going to be a lot of what happens in the new crops coming this next marketing year in Eastern Europe.
Boy, everybody's just been seeing that soybean market on a roll here over the last couple of weeks. It's a welcome sight for everybody. I think now we just want to try to figure out how long that rally might be able to last.
Been a nice change of pace, and it tells you how quickly things can turn. With Argentina, the world's largest exporter of soybean oil and soybean meal products, a little bit of a problem there and an upset in yield projections sure turned the market around. And as they say, a rising tide kind of lifts all boats. And I think that's helped spill over to the corn market a little bit, the DDG market, as soybean meal prices have risen pretty dramatically.
How long might it be able to last, all that premium being built into the market on the dryness in Argentina?
It's going to be interesting to see. We need some rains here in March to steady up yield potential for Argentina, despite the declines. A lot of people have brought that crop size down closer to 46 or 47 million metric tons versus the current USDA projection of 52. It could get lower. If March turns out as dry as February was, yield potential is coming down, and this market may have some legs until we get a sense for how many acres we're going to have here in the U.S. and what our growing season looks like.
Are we buying acres right now, speaking of them, here in the U.S. with this price battle?
The corn bean ratio would suggest at 2.6 or better that we're buying some bean acres, but boy, last year a lot of guys had some pretty phenomenal corn yields in light of an uneven growing season, and it's going to be interesting to see how this shakes out. A lot of guys love that yield from corn. So USDA is projecting corn and bean acres to be about equal this year. We'll have to see how it plays out.
For right now, that might be where it settles out. We'll have to focus in on what spring weather here in the U.S. gives us before we know more.
I think so. I think the soybean market especially will be very sensitive to the acres and to how this weather starts to look here for North America this year. And while we probably will see a pullback in the market as planting gets underway and we get a better sense for those acres, I would imagine the volatility is going to continue. We'll see some wild swings based on rain potential down there in early March. But I think the market's going to have to see where we go this spring before it really takes much of a tumble.
Soybean farmers, producers, those holding, should we be selling into this rally?
Well, I think that's been a great opportunity considering where we were at the end of the year and the dismal price projections that were in place. This has been a good rally, over a dollar, about a dollar in beans, and now maybe 25, 30 cents in corn. Producers have taken advantage of this. The funds started out the year with big short positions. The market rallied as they started to cover those positions. The farmer has sold into that rally, so now the speculative community owns the market, and the farmer has done a good job of pricing something on the rally here.
Something for the farmer to focus on before they really go with planting here in a couple more weeks.
Definitely. I think as we start to look at where we ended the month of February, setting our price insurance levels for the insurance program this year, we have a pretty good incentive to keep these acres up. And so if we have these acres and we have favorable yields again, we'll probably see some good market pressures again building by late summer and fall. So I encourage producers to take advantage of these rallies as they come and move some good marketing opportunities.
Thank you very much for the visit about the markets. Greg Groh with Archer Financial Services.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
As we said goodbye to the month of February and moved into the month of March, more talk in the farm fields of the United States will center on planting season and an end to all of the major agricultural shows. There was one this week, of course, Commodity Classic, that happened in Anaheim, California. That's the meeting that, to me, is one of the wise decisions made by agricultural commodity groups. There was a time when sorghum growers, wheat growers, corn growers, and soybean growers held individual conventions, conferences, and trade shows. And finally, they sat down and said, you know, when it comes to a trade show, we all deal basically with the same products in the production of the crops that we have on our fields. So maybe it would be a good idea to come together and rename the event Commodity Classic and hold the individual annual meetings of corn growers, soybean growers, and sorghum growers and wheat growers in the same location. So they've been doing that now for several years, and this past week they met in Anaheim, California. Then we have one more policy group holding its annual meeting, and that will be early next week. The National Farmers Union will be meeting in Kansas City for its annual convention early next week. Well, what about the commodity world as we take a look at where we ended the week and where we'll be starting trade on Monday? Live cattle futures, Chicago Mercantile Exchange fell today. Technical selling, expectations of a seasonal uptick in beef supplies as the pace of cattle slaughter is increasing. Rich Nelson, chief strategist for Allendale Incorporated, says there is a little concern that we might have posted the smallest supply of the year, and now we are facing higher numbers ahead. But lackluster cash cattle markets added to bearish sentiment. Cash cattle traded mostly $126 to $127 per hundredweight this week at feedlots in Texas, Kansas, and Nebraska. That's down $1 to $2 from deals a week earlier. Craig Van Dyke of Top Third Ag Marketing said, "We are struggling on the cash side on feeders and fed cattle, so the market just struggled to carry a bid throughout the day." Most active April live cattle futures settled the day down $1.15 at $122.17 per hundredweight. And April feeder cattle settled down $1.47, closing at $145.27. Nearby hog futures at the Mercantile Exchange closed higher, gaining against back months. The April lean hog contract was up 60 cents, ending at $67.57 a hundredweight. April hogs, though, narrowed their discount to the June contract one day after hitting the widest discount in the life of the spread. And one trader said, "That's telling me that we are trying to find a short-term low." So the grain market, because, yes, the planters will be getting ready, loaded up, and they'll be rolling before you know it. And, of course, we're now in the month of March. And at the end of the month, we'll come up with, well, several reports. Planting intentions report and surveys for that report being taken at this point. And in addition to that, we're going to be getting the quarterly pig crop report, which will tell us a little bit about the demand and how much we're going to have to meet that demand. So the Board of Trade wheat futures dropped 3.2% today, but that followed a six-day rally that had pushed prices to their highest level on wheat in 7.5 months. Bill Gentry, a broker at Risk Management Commodities, said this has just been a fantastic week of gains. The funds are taking a little bit of profit ahead of the weekend. The sharp decline in wheat weighed on the corn market, and that dropped after peaking at its highest level since August. And then soybean futures, which hit their highest since July of 2016, closed in positive territory after trading both sides of unchanged during the session. And the soybean market, still underpinned by signs of good export demand and expectations that the dry weather in Argentina will continue and the size of that Argentine crop will not get any larger. Well, you know what? We're out of time. But as always, we thank you for joining us as we talk markets every week. Thank you for that. Have a great week, and thank you for joining us on The Market, sponsored by the CME Group.